podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome along to the Shackles Are Off podcast, and we welcome the happy traveller back to British shores, Chris Millard. Hello, hello. Now, before we get into our podcast, we've got Izzy Westbury as our guest on. She's brilliant. She's out in the sun, so I've had enough of her already. We've not even spoke to her. I've had enough of you because you were in Barbados last week. How was it, by the way? Because it just looked like the best tour ever. Not obviously on the field, but off the field. I mean, 2 years of pent-up travelling Barmy Army frustration.
There was points in the last 2 years where I wasn't really sure if we were ever going to get on a tour again. When things were going bad, you're like, is travel ever going to come back? Are we ever going to go on a cricket tour again? Is that something that's going to be deemed necessary? And I think the last week just proved that it completely is necessary for so many people that love to watch the game abroad and travel overseas. There's still the demand there, arguably more than ever. One of the most watched, most travelled to away T20 series I've ever seen or witnessed. It was great to see so many people out there, so relieved to just be back on a cricket tour. And it was a shame what happened on the pitch, but it was also quite nice to see. It was so competitive. Look at what the West Indies did at the World Cup, and you thought, geez, we might roll them 5-0 here, but they've changed the strategy. They've gone for the young guns, and it's proved to be worth their while. We were obviously there with a rotated squad, as is the norm now with T20s, tests, ODIs. But it was nice to see four fairly competitive games and it go down right to the wire. And they were all quite close as well. And I'll be honest, I'm a test cricket fan. And then one day fan, and then probably T20 fan. But I got into it. I loved it. I enjoyed it. So it was great to watch England again overseas doing what they do. But I can confirm to everyone that Test is still the best format to watch overseas. So don't worry if you didn't make it to the T20s. In March, there is a 3-series Test tour. There's still some spaces left on the island. So come along and join us. And I will guarantee you 110% that it will be one of the best tours of your life, because it's been so long since a Test tour. England with a new head coach, more than likely, and a fairly new look team, you would imagine. And it'll be great. Be great to support the lads. It's the first time they've been supported in 2 years away from home fully. Obviously, the expats did a great job at the Ashes, but having a full travelling thousands of Barmy Army people will be great to see. And let's hope that England can do well on the field as well.
I agree. Test is best. And yeah, well, also on that point that you make about the head coach. Well, whoever it is, we're going to get behind them because that's what we do. So yeah, we'll look forward to kind of seeing who that's going to be. But we've got Sir Andrew Strauss sort of taking the reins temporarily in the next. So good luck to him.
Do you think it'll be someone who's been on our podcast?
I don't know. Possibly. I mean, there's a good chance. There's a good chance. We've had some belting names. If you've not checked them out, do go back and have a look. Some brilliant, brilliant guests on there as well. With some, I mean, well, the podcast
Randy called Caddick announced as the head coach.
that'd be a turn up for the books, wouldn't it? But yeah, I mean, there's a good, fairly good chance there, isn't there? And also, the podcast is called The Shackles Are Off, so you do get him talking fairly candidly. Also, this is why we've got Izzy Westbury coming on the podcast. She's had like a long tour. She covered the men's Ashes for BT and also for Triple M, which is like this bonkers Aussie radio station. We'll pick her brains on that one. You've been on there, Chris, as well, haven't you?
It's loose. It's really loose. It would not get anywhere near the airwaves in the UK for obvious reasons, because it is very, very Australian. But fair play to her. You've got to have thick skin to go and do a full Ashes tour on Triple M, I can assure you that.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Well, we'll pick her brains on that. She's also a very talented cricketer. She's played for Middlesex. She also played... She played international cricket for the Netherlands, I think, which is just a little bit bizarre. But anyway, Izzy West.
Knowledge. great knowledge.
He's our guest. Well, there you go. This is what you're paying for. We're going to be talking about the women's Ashes because we say Test is best. Test was best for out of all the games in the women's Ashes that we've seen. I mean, I was gripped to that. I was so happening to be working at sort of 6:15 one morning on the radio. I had a screen in the studio I was in and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, what? What's going on here? England looked like they're going to win. And then they lost 2 wickets there. Oh my God. And it was incredible to watch. And like people were saying, oh, it's the best finish ever. So I had to watch the highlights and it just looked like it, to be honest. So we're going to pick Izzy's.
It was incredible. It was an incredible advert as well. It's just such a shame that it was on an Australian time zone and it wasn't in the UK and kind of got everyone right behind it. I was sure that if that was in the English summer, there would have been a lot of attention, especially in the media. There already was, but
correct. Can you imagine Saturday afternoon in the summer in July? Because when those first couple of wickets that went down, they went 5-6 down. People 100% would have been going, oh my word, get the cricket on. It's going to be really exciting. Because that's what happens, isn't it?
It is a shame,
but it's got people talking once again, which is good. Also, talking of the Women's Ashes, you can actually play Women's Ashes on Cricket 2022, which is the new video console game. We have spoken about it on the podcast previously. We had one of the developers on one of our Ashes podcasts, which was exciting. It's actually an English guy who works with a load of Aussies developing it. The game studio out in Australia somewhere. It's very exciting. Anyway, you can play with like Meg Lanning, Heather Knight, against the men's teams as well, which is pretty cool. And Cricket 22 is available on all major consoles and very easy to pick up online and in a store near you. Have you played it, Chris? Because I've not actually.
I have, yeah, I have. When I was 18 for 5 in my first game, I thought it's probably not for me. yeah, it's one of them. The graphics are incredible. Like, whoever does the graphics on that game, I tip my hat to you because they have taken some time in making sure that these players look exactly like the players that are playing. Well, all the ones that I've seen anyway. And I was really impressed with it. And the game features on there are really enjoyable as well. But there isn't a feature that can make you good quickly. And that's what I would have needed to not be 18 for 5. But yeah, I think I climbed to about 60 odd and then retired.
Right. Sounds like you need a bit more practice.
Yeah. I think I probably do, yeah. I think I probably do. Should we have a session one weekend?
I'm all right. I'm really kidding. It sounds really good. And also, we did see, actually, when we had that Greenwood Sports Bar event just before the Ashes, there was a console set up there, I believe, I've definitely seen it. And I did have to do a bit of a double take and think, geez, what cricket's that on? All right, it's just a game. Brilliant graphics, like you say. So there you go. Easy to pick up online and also in a store near you. So our guest is former Middlesex and international cricketer, Izzy Westbury. And she is on the podcast in her capacity as a broadcaster now. Let's get into the chat. Hope you enjoy. So we've got Izzy Westbury with us on the Shackles Are Off podcast. Now, Izzy, it looks beautiful and sunny where you are. And I mean, you've had a great tour. How long have you been out there for, by the way?
I must have arrived in December. And sometimes I think, oh, I'm so knackered and I need to go home. And then I remember that it's February in London and it's dark and it's raining and it's horrible and there's nothing to look forward to and you haven't stuck to your January diet or anything that you were supposed to, and then I think, no, I don't really want to come back, thanks very much.
You do, right? You've had a great tour. You have, because it's been, although disappointing from an England perspective, there's been loads to talk about. As a journalist, you have got to cover so many different stories, loads of different talking points. I mean, how long ago does it seem the whole Tim Payne, Pat Cummins being in debacle? I mean, that seems like months and months ago now, doesn't it?
I mean, at that point, the narrative was that Australia were more... Am I allowed to swear on this podcast, by the way?
Yeah, of course you are.
Yeah, okay. Well, Australia were more fucked than we were coming into the men's Ashes. And you just thought, this is beautiful. And then that was about the only high point of the whole tour. But, I mean, listen, you sign up. When you look at the fixture list and you think England's men and women are going to Australia, I mean, neither of them have a great record. Chances are you're going to be absolutely battered. So you might as well enjoy it while you're there. And it's pretty much how it went.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and you've been covering it for BT Sport as well as a bit of Australian media. Triple M. What are the Triple M guys like?
You would love Triple M. Triple M are like, I feel like if the Barmy Army had cricket commentary, it would be Triple M. I mean, it's the concept is nuts. It's a rock station, so they're a music station. They've just got, you know, you normally tune in on your 5 p.m. drive time, and they've just got some really nice tunes. Actually, I've had a whole education in my musical education here. And then now and again, they just cover cricket. I mean, they do a lot of AFL, Aussie rules stuff. So it's kind of the equivalent of, I mean, I almost want to put it down to like a talk sport kind of vibe, but then still the whole rock station covering cricket. And I mean, I asked if I could swear on here, and I didn't really need to ask when I was on there. It's pretty loose. I mean, you've got Merv Hughes, James Brayshaw, Greg Blewett, of course, Brad Haddin, who's a big fan of the Barmy Army, big fan. It was me, and then so I guess I was the token pom alongside not so much a token pom in Lord Ian Botham, but it got so bad at one point. I think he walked out. I'm pretty sure he walked out of the booth in Hobart. It can be quite a siege mentality, but that, I don't know, that's when the fun comes out, really.
Yeah, it sounds a bit of you, Chris, actually, now, a bit of rock music. And this band has Radio X on all the time, by the way, is he? So,
well, there you go. I mean, this is a new niche. I feel as though there's like an untapped audience there. If Radio X started doing cricket commentary, it could be as successful as Triple M.
There you go. Toby Tarrant's been on, hasn't he? So he's up for it.
I was going to say, don't tell Toby that idea. Jeez.
I've been on Triple M a couple of times before, and it is full on. Like, I wasn't ready for it. On the last tour, I went in radio interview. Yeah, no worries. Got in there, just literally got abused for like 20 minutes and then walked out. I was like, good morning.
I was lucky, though, because Isha Gua did it about 4 years ago, and that was kind of her entrance into the Australian audience. And she gave me about a two hour briefing before I signed anything. But like, you do realize what you're getting into, because I think it's the exhausting relentlessness of it. In a way, it's easier when England get absolutely smashed, because if it was close, it would almost be worse, because you'd have to fight a little bit more. But now you just have to kind of just sit there and go, yeah, it's pretty shit.
Take it. Yeah.
So good. We've actually got a brilliant clip. Producer Chuck's going to fire it in for us about a moment where you, let's say, caught them out, and you know exactly what we're referring to. But for the listeners, just have a listen to this.
Root holds his shape in defence. 2 for 81 comes down the track. There's a bit of gardening. This is his Annus Mirabilis. 6 at 3 so far this calendar year. Ethan Lyon hunting his 400th test wicket.
Nice.
You mean chasing up Annus Mirabilis? Who?
Yes, be very careful how you say
it. How do you pronounce it again?
Annus.
Hey, I'm the shrine of the true man. Never doubt, you see. It is a...
In a way, it got lost on the radio, because it was the facial expressions that really did it. So Blewett's just sitting there going, what the fuck are you talking about? And you know when you're like, you just say something. I mean, an Annus Mirabilis, I didn't study Latin at school, but it's a bit like Carpe Diem. Everybody know what you're talking about. You're talking about Joe Root and his centuries last year. I was basically trying to say that it was like the most ridiculous year he's ever had. So you just whack out this phrase, and they... Blewett and Callum Ferguson, the nicest of blokes, just sitting there going, I've got no idea what she's saying. And so for a moment, I'm sitting there going, shit, if I said something stupid or wrong, or, you know, if I got this phrase wrong my whole life. And then, of course, with their wonderful Australian accents, they sort of go, is that an anus? An anus paralysis? Be careful about that one.
It's good. We like that. We're here for it. If you're confusing the Aussies with a bit of Latin, I mean, I love it.
I hadn't even said a word on Australian radio when I went viral because of that first ball wicket of Burns. Because I just come into the box to kind of see how they do it. I was like, I'm on in the next half an hour. I should probably see what their vibe is. And I'm just standing there and obviously I basically try and climb the walls to get out because it was so awful. Every time you come to Australia, you're thinking, just need to have a good first half hour, it's fine. You get brought up, whether you saw the Harmons and stuff, or you saw, was it that first ball in 94 getting cut before, I can't remember who it was, but like every you get brought up with English men's cricket, Test cricket, Ashes cricket, that first half hour is so important. Don't fuck it up. And when you see it unraveling in front of you in a room full of this like Australians who are kind of wound up to the hilt, ready to go for the Ashes. They haven't played any Test cricket, Australia, since India had smashed them at the Gabba in March. They're like, they're so tight and so ready for this. And then that happened. I was just like, how am I here?
Yeah. We were in a bar in central London. I think it was about 12:30, and there was like 300 England fans that were buzzing, super excited, and then it's 11 for 3.
Just yeah, and you're telling yourself like it's one ball, it's just the start of a whole series, but you know what's going to happen next, and that's pretty much what did happen the rest of the tour. But yeah, I mean every journalist will say the secret, I guess, to the unspoken secret is that writing about glorious defeat is far easier than writing about a victory, because you can lose a match in so many more ways than you can win one. So yeah, if you ever want an answer for why some of the journalists in that press box can get a bit haggard and craggy, it's probably because they're looking for a glorious defeat over anything else.
Yeah, which is good, because you do breathe sort of some lifeblood into it. You know, I've sat in a couple of press boxes at cricket grounds, and it's different, isn't it? I say it's different. It's probably really exactly what you'd imagine, but it's changing. It is changing a little bit, but for the better.
I mean, fundamentally, we're all a bit weird. I mean, if you cover cricket, if you write about cricket for your, it's not only your job, it's like you live and breathe the stuff. If you want, because there's so few cricket journalists around, I guess, if to sort of stand out, you've got to really absolutely love it. And yeah, we're all a bit weird, you know. So I think different types of weird is absolutely fine, and the more the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you just talked about losing matches in various ways. Well, goodness gracious me. Well, I'll tell you what. So I, in my other job, that's more paid and is probably a more real job than this one, but far less enjoyable. I was on the radio.
Now, James. No need to talk about other jobs on this.
Be very careful with what I say. Far less enjoyable. I was sat on the radio the other day when that ridiculous finish was in the Test match, and I couldn't follow it because I'm trying to focus on a conversation, and I'm thinking I can't quite work out what on earth is happening here. And then Kate Cross, Jimmy Anderson-esque, sort of battered out at the end. It was brilliant. It was so good. I mean, there was all four results still possible, wasn't it? Right until the wire, which was great. You were there for that and covering it. Talking about the women's Ashes, it's not been a glorious, sensational defeat like the men's has, but it's been exciting, and there's been a lot more coverage, particularly of that Test match, hasn't there? Loads of people talking about it who perhaps wouldn't have done usually. That's got to be a good thing, is it?
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the nicest things about being a woman in sport, or covering women's sport, is that sometimes I think, God, if I was, I don't know, like a football journalist covering the Premier League, I mean, it gets pretty cyclical and you end up just talking about transfer fees and quite boring. I mean, you, more off the field than on the field. Whereas in women's sport, sometimes you're like, oh, my God, it's so frustrating and there's so much inequality or whatever. But then you're also like, actually, every day is better than the day before, and it's progressing. And I think that's the exciting thing, is that it doesn't take that much investment or attention for the stuff to really improve pretty quickly, which is also where the frustration comes. It's like, can't you see how, with just 5 years of semi-professional cricket in England and how good the players are, You know, I kind of got out just playing the game when it started getting semi-professional, and I wouldn't want to play against any of these women. And they look at Australia, who've been semi, you know, had a stronger domestic league for longer. And they're ridiculously athletes. They're amazing. And I think it's, I feel like Test cricket in a way could really suit women, because if you think about it, the last 10 years, T20 has been the game that's been used to kind of grow the women's cricket. And it's worked to an extent, and it's got a lot more, it's quick, it's fast, you can get people engaged more quickly. But actually, I mean, if it's relying on strength and power and speed, that's something which women are, you know, aren't comparable to men. But actually, the perseverance, the timing, the like endurance sports as well. Like, you know, we're seeing sort of women running ridiculous 100-mile feats and beating men doing it. And in a way, you feel like actually Test cricket and that endurance aspect of it could be really well suited to women. And that's why it's so good to have the four-day test, the finish that we had between England and Australia, is that they don't get an opportunity to show what they can do. They've got this dual pressure of having to win, but also to put on a show. And so when it comes off, obviously it's amazing. And you think, you know, if we can get this more regular, then I think women's test cricket could be really fun. Yeah, absolutely. And besides, I feel like I've got this thing, this lost calling, that I feel like I was uniquely suited to becoming a night watcher in Test cricket, but never got the opportunity. So I'll be shouting for that one for a long time.
Do you do you have any strong feelings on how many days a women's test should be?
I mean, I kind of think that every time we've sort of said women's cricket should have this or that, we've underestimated them, and they've shown actually what they can do. So I kind of think, well, why not 5 days? But I don't think it's like the key thing to making women's test cricket exciting or competitive. I think, to be honest, what we saw in Canberra, where this Ashes test was played, was a really good pitch. And that's what's key. Because I think in the past, is that if you have one test every 2 years or one every year, and it's the one opportunity to showcase, quite often it's been on a really dead pitch, and you've got these quite boring draws where people just racked up scores, or the run rate's got really slow. Because if you don't play that much, you are either kind of one or the other, really. And so it has been not a great spectacle, but what you need is that wonderful balance. And I mean, Catherine Brunt, the way that she bowls, you could put a camera on her for the whole test match and you'd be entertained. But she said, you know, it has something in it for her. But then we also saw the way in which Heather Knight batted to get that 150 was just immense. So it's no different to men's test cricket, is that you want to have pitches that have a bit in it for everyone, and then you'll get the best matches. And that's really probably, that was the key, I'd suggest, the pitch.
I mean, we'd love to see another test match like that in the UK, 100%, because you'd pack out a county ground, wouldn't you? You know, a smaller county ground for a test match like that. If you knew, if punters knew that that's what they were going to get, you'd pack it out. No problem.
Oh, 100%. And like, some of the best England women's cricket that I've seen has been at the smaller counties, so to speak. So like at a Chelmsford or down at Brighton and Hove, where you've got 7,000-8,000 capacity. And you know, even men's test cricket, you're not going to really routinely pack out the 25,000 seat stadium. Like if you have the county grounds that don't normally get the men's test matches, put more women's test matches for there. The atmosphere, the pitches, that can become their thing. It feels like, the good thing is, it feels like people in England certainly are starting to clock that this could be a really viable product. I mean, that's, I guess, the bottom line in the end, which is so often hindered women's cricket, is it's not going to make a return in the next 5 minutes. But actually, people are realising that it's not just going to be in 50 years' time. Actually, in 5-10 years' time, it could be something really, really big.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, just want to pick you up on a point there as well about, you played for Middlesex, and you know, what was the standard like then compared to now? I mean, you said you wouldn't want to play against any of the players now, but seriously, I mean, is it changed? Has it changed that much? You know, has it improved that much since you were playing?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, like, I would say that I was a good athlete and had a good eye for the ball, but if there had been way more girls that had been open to cricket and they realised it was a viable career path, I wouldn't have had a chance in hell. And in a way, I was quite lucky to play in the era that I did, because I was of a small pool of players, I guess, that was just reasonably athletic and, yeah, eye for the ball kind of stuff. But, you know, I played football and other things as well. But I don't think I'd have had a chance at the moment. The interesting stuff about women's sport now is, like, if you're a 10, 11-year-old athletic all-rounder girl, what sport do you pick? And at the moment, I'd probably say football has the upper hand. I mean, because they've got sponsorship and the coverage, the free-to-air coverage, like that's kind of the most attractive pathway. And that's cricket, sort of, that's the challenge now for cricket, is how can you attract those best young athletes? And that's what Australia does really well, because they've got other sports here, like the AFL Women's Codes and soccer, football here is a pretty big pathway, and basketball. So they're all competing against each other, saying, we want to grab those athletes. And we're seeing that in some of the young bowlers coming through for Australia, already bowling at 75 miles an hour at the age of 18, which is immense in the women's game. And I think that's what English cricket needs to do. And yeah, I think also just if you can train full time. I remember what England did a bit differently was that they first started making England women full-time professionals, but kind of didn't do anything with the tier underneath. So you had sort of 18 women in 2014 suddenly overnight became full-time professionals. And then if you were the 19th woman, you got nothing. So there's quite this gap just grew, where suddenly they were training full-time and we were kind of like, oh shit, I've got to go to my nets at 5 o'clock after work. And so of course, you know, Nat Simmons was already smashing the ball past me at cover, and then the next year it was just going out a little bit faster kind of thing. Whereas in Australia, they've had a bit more incremental, we're going to invest in a domestic structure. And that's probably what we're seeing play out at the moment, and why Australia in the women's game, just as they are as the men's game, are stronger than England. But what will be interesting will be in 5 years' time, when, you know, 100, love it or loathe it, it's probably going to have a massive impact on women's cricket. It just gets it into that pedestal. More people are professional. And I think, yeah, that's when the Ashes could be really competitive. It's just a little bit too soon for England right now.
I had a chat with a county development officer last week, and he was really insightful about how boys and girls in primary schools are now playing, but they're both playing cricket rather than the boys playing cricket and the girls playing rounders. It's now the girls are playing cricket ahead of rounders, which I think is as big a move as any for the women's game, for the growth of it.
Yeah, it's just numbers as well. I mean, if you have more people introduced to the game and not being told, oh, no, cricket's for boys and you've got to go do athletics or whatever it was we had to do, then you're just, you know, you're just going to have more people to pick from. So, and again, I think women's cricket, like, is a growth area. It's such an easy thing to tap into. But in a way, even if, you know, even the biggest misogynist ever, if you just wanted to look at the bottom line and make money, like, invest.
Yeah,
exactly. It's quite timely. You can probably hear the rain just absolutely pounding down in London, by the way. Horrendous. So on that note, are you looking forward to what lies ahead for you in the summer? What's the summer looking like for Izzy Westbury?
Yeah, good question. I mean, we'll get back to England at some point, I guess. I mean, the Commonwealth Games is coming up, which I think will be quite big for the women's game, but also for cricket in itself, if that goes well. So only the women are competing in the Commonwealth Games, but you kind of feel as though it's the pathway for the Olympics, possibly, which could be massive for the game around the world. You get the US involved, possibly even China. So I think Commonwealth Games, it sounds like South Africa are going to come over for the women. And play a test match as well. And then, I mean, obviously, we've already been talking about the whole thing in the media at the moment is the massively congested England men's calendar. So it's always nuts. And I kind of just enjoy covering cricket. I think the media is going that way, like, especially in broadcast, of you're getting a much bigger crossover of men covering women covering men, and then just, you know, the best commentators, the best writers in the end will just be covering the biggest games from either gender. And I think England's pretty good at that. You look at, you know, I'm out here with Henry Moran's here with the BBC, he's been covering women for ages as well as he does men's. Charles Dagnall as well. Nasser Hussain was at the T20 World Cup. And I think that's so important, is having that crossover. It's happening. It's getting there. So
we've spoken. before with Australian guests that we've had, and we've just said, I mean, there's just the parity is like unbelievable, isn't it? Like in terms of the sport there, like it seems like there's not really, obviously there's issues still, but there's not as big of a difference in between men's and women's, and where they approach it and they herald certain stars. Like you look at Elise Perry, Meg Lanning, they get talked about in the same way, well, kind of way, to, you know, Pat Cummins does, for example, or Steve Smith, whereas you don't get that here yet. So I wonder what it's, you know, whilst you've been out there, it's been, must have been a bit of an eye-opener, even though I know you go all the time, but you must have seen a refresher, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, it is. It's just, it's kind of where, in some ways, I think Australia is 30 years behind us, but in other ways, you think actually they're ridiculously progressive. And like the difference as well is that you see cricketers, men and women, like fronting quite big adverts, like for big car companies or for everyday products, which you don't really see that in the UK. And, you know, you could argue what the reasons are for that, whether it's behind paywalls, etc. But it's just much more in the conscience. And then I think the BBL was a really big part of it as well, is that the women's tournament started in 2015 and 16. They could kind of, they just latched straight onto an already quite successful product for the men. And suddenly they had this very strong ethos of two teams, one club. And I think that's what the 100's trying to do. And they've, I mean, you know, there's obviously issues with the salaries of men versus women, and that will, you know, hopefully come to parity at some point. But what they've done well is they put the teams and the players on the same pedestal. When you see marketing for something, if there's a men's player, there's a women's player, and it's not hard. It's not going to cost you that much money to do. And I think, yeah, it's just little things. So part of it's the culture. Just seeing cricketers in your like day-to-day life. Because I think that's one of the things that we've really got to get better in men's and women's cricket in England. Is when I was playing for Middlesex, I quite often did Chance to Shine clinics, a lot of the state schools, and you'd sort of you'd be demonstrating a sweep shot and saying, oh, you know, Joe Root, he's great at this, and most people will turn around and go, Joe who? And to me, that's not blasphemy, but it's like, how is that possible that this, like, our greatest batter of this era and, you know, one of the top 10 of all time for English cricket is not even part of the conversation. But I think, you know, things are changing. You know, streaming is going to be a big thing, and people are consuming cricket in a different way. And that's one way where something like the 100 could play a huge role. So, yeah. I mean,
how do you think England will fare in the Women's World Cup just around the corner?
I mean, I'm worried about Australia. they're just such a great unit, you lose one player and you've got another one sort of like a carbon copy. I mean, Elise Perry was essentially dropped from their T20 team because they had a better, younger model who had hit the ball harder. And you just think that's Elise Perry. She's not even getting a start. So, yeah, I mean, Australia have the tools to do it. Anything can happen in the World Cup. I mean, in the 2017 World Cup, England were not favourites, and through circumstance, good leadership, losing that. Lose the first match. The number of World Cups, especially women's ones, where you lose the first or second match and go on to win it is uncanny. India should. I mean, in many ways, like, world cricket should be supporting India, because they kind of need, a bit like the men's cricket when they won the T20 World Cup in the early 2000s, or even just the One Day Cup in the 1980s, that was the impetus to really investing in their men's white ball structure and look at the powerhouse it's become. And you kind of feel like with India women is that they need something to hang their cap on. And then again, the administrators, the power and the money that's in the BCCI could transform the game. And that's it's great to see, because Australia they're scared. They're really scared because they're number one at the moment and they're dominating, and they probably will for the next few years. But they know that once India realizes like how many women play the game, how many girls play the game, and if they use those numbers and invested a bit more, that they will dominate the world just like the men are doing right now. So, I mean, if anything, just to get all the Aussies off their high horse, I'm all Team India.
We love to hear that as a Barmy Army podcast. Izzy, we'll let you get back to the cocktails at Kilda. Enjoy the rest of your time in Australia.
Just before we lose you, Izzy, we're really hearing a lot of murmurings of a female IPL, women's IPL, but that ain't going to happen in the short term. But there is this new competition that's been bandied about, the Fair Breaks competition.
Yeah,
I'm sure are you aware of that and what's going to be happening there? Is that something you can speak about now?
Yeah, I don't know all that much about it, because it's been a sort of initiative that's been going on for a few years, trying to get women, I think, from just teams that don't necessarily have the funding and the infrastructure. Because at the moment, if you're not really England, Australia or India, it's quite hard to break into the sort of domestic circuits where, you know, it's a lot more money and it's more lucrative. And just in a way, women's cricket is a great vehicle for getting women from the non-traditional countries like Thailand. We saw the T20 World Cup in 2020, and I think it's so Fair Break is, I think they've got a mini tournament happening in Dubai in May. Amazing. But they've got, I think I saw someone from Sweden's playing there, like all kinds of disparate countries. It sounds amazing. But yeah, that's about as much as I know of it. But it's, yeah, cricket, it can be a truly global game. And it, in a way, women's cricket probably has more of a chance sometimes than the men, because, you know, if you're Thailand men's team, it's quite hard to get into the top 10 of the men's country with women, because it's still developing and quite young in that development. It's much easier for a Brazil or a Thailand or even a USA, a China to get in. So yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
Awesome. Exciting stuff. Something you can ponder over a few cocktails with Moran and Hartley, I'm sure, in just a moment. Thanks for coming onto the podcast, Izzy. Really good to talk to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure, chap.
Podcast Network.